In this podcast series, we are hearing the stories, journeys, and lessons from the women who designed and developed learning journeys. Fueled with immense inspiration and unwavering resilience, these stories are inclusive, holistic, diverse, and above all, courageously honest. Hello, everyone. I'm Tina Balachandran, a storyteller, facilitator, settlement worker, and a new immigrant. Learning Journeys is a two-year social research and development project contracted by Pacific Immigrant Resources Society and funded by IRCC to find ways to improve services for immigrant women. And what the project did was it brought together newcomer women, service providers, and community partners to illuminate pathways to better outcomes for newcomer women. The intent was clear from the onset, the importance of bringing immigrant women voices to the table. How to do this authentically and effectively was not clear then, and we will find out in our dialogues today how that happened organically. In today's podcast, Lydian Barreta, one of the original Immigrant Women Advisory Committee members, and Andrea Solnes, one of the Learning Journeys leads, join me to talk about how building and tending to relationships became one of the key outcomes of the project. Welcome to the podcast, Lydian and Andrea.
Thank you, Tina. It's great to be here with you.
Thank you, Tina. I'm very happy to be here today.
It is so wonderful to have both of you here with us today. I'm going to start off by taking a few lines from the work of Njoki Muburu, our recent partner and creative writer. Learning journey is like a garment, a complete and comprehensible creation formed from the union of individual strands. The strands by themselves do not form the garment unless there are people who use their imagination, creativity, and skills to design, measure, sew, and present the garment. Learning journeys is a coming together, a weaving of individual strands to create a pattern and texture that borrow from the unique element of each strand while ensuring the integrity of the entire garment. Thank you, Njoki, for those beautiful, beautiful words. Andrea, you are one of the creators and leaders of the Learning Journeys. Tell me more about this glorious garment.
Yeah, Tina, I love this description so much because it captures really what first inspired me to develop a project like Learning Journeys. I had worked in the settlement sector for all my career and have always been so inspired and really felt privileged to see the courage and the resilience of newcomers. And honestly, just really always wanted to share what I get to see. And so working with PIRS in this space, with immigrant women and service providers to together dig into the work around collaboration and a more humanized and holistic approaches to designing programs and services. So by really opening spaces for drawing on different knowledge and perspectives and having conversations that start with strengths and helping women find meaningful, relevant ways to contribute their skills, it's just been incredibly rewarding and I think powerful and beautiful in the results.
So this was the first time newcomer immigrant women were part of the designing solutions, co-designing and collaborating. Is that right, Andrea?
It's certainly the first I had seen this happen. It's really an exciting approach to programs and designing programs and services.
And I'm going to hear more about the humanizing holistic approach from you further in our conversations today. Lydian, you're a part of this process from the start. I really want to know about the early stages of the research. What was your experience with the Learning Journey leads and the other immigrant women when you first joined the project?
When I joined the Learning Journey and I met other women and the leaders, I would be all very honest with you. I thought about giving up. I wondered what I was doing there. Maybe you are thinking, why? They spoke English very well, And I felt like a baby bubbling for the first words. I don't know if there is, especially in English, I felt like a fish out of water. But I remember one friend and I went to talk to the leaders. Mm-hmm. In that moment was Andrea. She's here today. And I told her, we are not able to continue. And she asked us, please, don't give up. Let's try together. Let's have an ethnography part. Maybe this can help us to know each other better. The other participants, they also encouraged me and my friend as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this ethnography part, I could organize my thoughts, my feelings, my weakness, mm-hmm. and outline my short and long-term goals and see my strengths.
Wow. And I'm going to come to you more about that specific thing that you've said about organizing your thoughts and feelings and seeing your strengths. So it seems like it was so much more than data and research. The ethnography was at the very early stages of the project. Andrea, I'm coming to you here. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Sure. So the first objective of the project was to increase knowledge and understanding about immigrant women's experiences with settlement services. So we started with an in-depth research piece with 13 immigrant women, Lydianne being one of them, and through interviews and group sessions, we learned about their experiences with settlement and focused on their needs, their goals, their challenges, and their strengths.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So Lydianne, you mentioned earlier how the process of ethnography helped you evaluate and articulate your thoughts and see your strengths. Were there any fears and obstacles? And if they were, what helped you overcome that?
Yeah, I remember my biggest obstacle or challenge was to communicate. So speak and listening, understanding was so hard for me, as I felt lost and totally out of place with my beginner's English. I think ethnography part was necessary for me to find myself again,
mm-hmm.
To build a connection to leaders and trust in this project.
Wow.
And the first group session helped me to building relationships. I had just arrived in Canada. I didn't know anyone. I was feeling lonely and bad about myself for not being able to be what I am in my mother language, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I can say I was very welcomed by all, and I welcomed them in my life as well. And I think the friendship I born there, that's why you take for the rest of my life. Well, encourages, empowers, and roots each other. So I realized that being part of this project was not only help to improve my English skills and gain confidence again, but also I support my new 12 friends and together help other immigrant women that are facing the same challenge that we are facing.
Amazing, amazing. So not only did you gain the skills that you needed, you also found your tribe. And as a fellow newcomer, this resonates with me so much, Lydianne. It is incredibly empowering and refreshing. Knowing that you're not alone is such a leveler. The learnings from each other's lived experiences and the oneness of the challenges that we navigate is a connector, despite the medley of backgrounds and circumstances, right?
Yes.
Andrea, I am very curious to know, was relationship building an intended outcome of this project?
Actually, not at all. It was kind of the hidden gem that we found along the way, and that really ended up being a key theme throughout the project.
Wow, that's quite something. Quite a discovery, I must say. And how did this play into other activities designed by learning journeys? The learning labs, for instance, where the women and the service providers worked together.
Yeah, so the learning lab was really the second stage of the project, where the immigrant women that we had been working with came together with service providers and community members. And together they generated ideas and designed and prototyped together around projects related to what had come out of the research, mostly around access to childcare, mentorship, and informal support groups to talk about some of the most difficult and sometimes taboo issues that women were facing. So essentially, we aimed to keep the women's voices at the table while we looked at solutions for the challenges that were often not being addressed in the programs that the women had been a part of.
So the women were actively engaged in the processes of ideation, designing, prototyping, while working with the community members and service providers both.
Exactly.
Andrea, what does it really look like to bring women's voices to the table?
For me, this was really the crux of my learning. I think I had been idealistic in what bringing voices to the table really meant. I had such a strong belief that if we just opened the opportunities up, women would step in and share their stories, experiences, and perspectives. But you can hear from Lydianne's experience that there was nothing straightforward or simple about that. I knew we would need to support the process with pre and post workshop meetings, for example, so that the women could see some of the ideas we were working with and be able to speak to them in the lab. But it was really so much more about just holding space for women to reflect and share and be heard. And that sometimes that meant just checking in with women to see how they were feeling, listening, helping, as Lydianne mentioned, helping them to organize and share their ideas and encouraging them to move forward with them. It was a lot of work at times, but by letting go of my expectation of how things would unfold, and in many ways, letting go of the roles I had anticipated, the relationships grew stronger, and I think so did the women. I'm loving the expression, moving at the speed of trust, and I think that's what I learned to do.
Ton of work, Andrea, ton of work in the exercise of experimenting, reinventing, letting go, and getting out of your comfort zone. Wise words are ringing in my head. You can choose courage or you can choose comfort. You cannot have both, right?
You're right.
Lydianne, tell us about your work with the service providers. While participating in the in-person learning labs, was there anything in particular that helped you contribute?
Yes. The lab was a very good and positive experience because I innocently see that we open our hearts and put our voice out. I said everything I have in mind, but their service provider were very welcome and listened to our side with great empathy and great desire to make a difference. I remember the last in-person lab, my group was discussing ideas to improve mentoring projects. And after address our ideas, it would be necessary to present them to all the other groups. And my group asked me to go ahead and present. I said that I would not be able. One of service providers helped me to sketch and said, "You are able. If you are unable to speak, then read what we have drafted. There is no problem reading. No one will judge you." One year later, this person is my mentor now.
What an excellent example of leadership that enables. We need more of that, don't we?
Yes, totally.
Andrea, did the other women have similar experiences?
I think so. We heard from them early on that listening was really a signal that their stories were important. And listening, as you heard from Lydianne, gave them a chance to reflect on how far they had come, their strengths, and where they wanted to go. And we saw that over time, many of the women became more confident to speak to increasingly broader audiences and even move into advocacy. They spoke of realizing what they had to offer the learning process was really important.
Again, here, I cannot stop myself from drawing parallels to my personal journey. Sometimes all you need is that one audience who believes in your story. And as a service provider, creating spaces where voices are not muted, but allowed to amplify is really, really something. How did COVID affect these relationships, Andrea?
Yeah, this became a really challenging time. COVID hit just when the groups were designing their solutions and creating prototypes, a difficult task at the best of times. Mm. And so of course we went online. But the challenge was even greater because many of the service providers who had been involved in the lab had to step away because of their own increased and overwhelming workloads. So this is the time I'm really speaking of when I mentioned letting go of the roles I had anticipated. Mm-hmm. And at times it became overwhelming as I had a huge sense of responsibility to support these women so committed to their roles. And sometimes it felt unsustainable as Sandrine, the PRS lead, and I, we stepped more into coaching roles, mm-hmm. but we also tended to a lot of needs we saw emerging in terms of some of the personal challenges the women were facing, and in some cases, some conflict between group members, which was really challenging for us.
Mm-hmm. And that sounds like a lot of pivoting. What was working at this point?
So when the service provider stepped back, the women really showed a determination to keep the projects running. And in cases such as Lydianne, stepped into the leadership roles.
Wow.
Yeah. So as leads, we were eventually able to support groups with more consistency because we were online. And now this is when the co-design model came in. And I think, you know, the roots of it are really out of necessity. We had to focus on smaller pieces and really rely on the skills and commitment of the women. So our roles became less holding all the pieces together as we stepped back and together focused on what was possible and found ways to genuinely engage women in the design of really everything we were doing.
You had with you this abundant potential in form of these determined women, and COVID gave you an excuse to just build on that capacity.
Yes, it really was an opportunity.
Lydianne, how did your role in learning journeys and your relationships change when COVID hit?
When the COVID-19 came, I felt that I need to help my group make our ideas happen. We need to develop trust and share our strengths. I was working a group research and mentorship, and I didn't know how to use the search tools. I went on Google and researched it, and I told my group, we are going to test it. Another colleague created an email group through WhatsApp to try to create a closer communication. Mm-hmm. But do you know how this technology that we are using now today was too new for us on that time? What supported me was the relationship of trust and care that we created. I still remember one of the leaders, in this case, she's Andrea. She called us to make sure how we are doing, if you needed something. So it makes all the difference. Knowing that there is someone who cares about us. I have always taken care of everyone around me. And today being cared for is so comforting. And what will also support us were willing to make it happen and to seek other humans will need this effort of ours in the future.
Another classic example of leadership that was reimagining and empowering with unseen, unprecedented challenges, in this case, a pandemic. So what I'm hearing is that this was all solution driven. Lydia, and you were really moving forward in problem solving while evolving and improvising.
Yes, right.
Andrea, where was all this leading to? What was all this heading towards?
Yeah, so by July, the three groups that had been working together completed their research and design, and they presented three prototypes to an online audience of 90 plus people.
That was me. I was one of your 90 plus audiences.
Yes, you were. At that point, it was really exciting to start bringing on board a new range of women such as yourself who could add to our diverse experiences and perspectives. And we, from there, we embarked on year two of our journey.
So the learning fair was a reset. What changed?
Yeah, a lot of things changed. First and foremost, throughout the first year, we had had these three main groups of stakeholders, but we started to find a lot more resonance between women who were simply facing the same issues or had in the past. I remember a pivotal moment for myself of learning was soon after the learning fair. I was debriefing with a group of women, and they had been presenting on immigrant women and childcare. And I really wasn't sure where this group was going in our final stage of learning journeys and didn't really have an agenda. But what ended up happening was a very impassioned dialogue between one immigrant woman, a service provider, and a community partner about their struggles with childcare. And I was so struck by the resonance between them and how they supported each other and their determination to move the dial on this issue. And so, inspired by moments like that, when we moved into our current and final stage, we collapsed the categories that we had been working with. And our IWAC committee is now currently 19 women with a wide range of experiences, and together they're working on co-design projects.
Quite a journey there. I'm interested in hearing the lessons learned from both of you. What was the most challenging part? What supported you? Lydienne.
For me, my biggest challenge was the co-design part. At that moment, I forgot my strengths and let my weakness speak louder. There were many ideas, but they were all uncertain, many different opinions, perspectives. And I realized that one of the participants wanted to do something very different from what the group had planned since the labs. And I need to say I gave up on continuing and let her make her wishes come true. So she really wanted to make her idea happen. But for me, it was very different from what we had planned. So it broke the group.
That must have been very, very harsh. What were the lessons in this heartbreak?
Yeah, it was hard for everyone. I learned that I cannot let fear, my weakness, take over me. I need to be on top of my feelings and fight for my strength to come forward, right? What helps me to do this is to think like one strategy, if it's happy in Portuguese. What I do if I were in Brazil and the situation in Portuguese? Yeah, so I would fight for my ideas if I was in Brazil speaking Portuguese. And I was fight for group's idea to the end. I was going to make sure that the project had a little bit of each participant. I would have fought for the group. I would have fought for me. But now I know. If I come across this situation again, I already know what to do. So stop, breathe, organize my ideas, and fight for the group's voice to stand out.
Oh, you have all the tools.
Now I have.
Lydia, I'm hearing a process. There was collapse followed by healing and rebuilding. So that's quite phenomenal.
Yeah.
Andrea, as a lead, what was that like for you? What was challenging for you?
Yeah, holding space for uncertainty is very difficult, I learned. And I was always really inspired by the women who remained open and trusting and hopeful in the process. And even when things didn't work out as planned, there was always a lot of richness in what we were learning and the relationships being formed. But the hardest times were around the ones that Lydianne was describing, when the uncertainty led to disappointment. In co-design, we were allowing for leadership to emerge, mm-hmm. and having people trust the process that you've put in place and having it not work out for individuals really felt unacceptable to me. And I had to let go of my need to try and fix things, and that Band-Aid solutions are a real disservice to a process like this. And I've learned that sometimes the best you can do is find gentle off-ramps for people. But people are going to be disappointed. And ultimately, I have to accept that I've done my best and really trust in the strength and resilience of the women and the relationships that we've built.
Embracing uncertainties and being okay with that is when change happens. And moving on despite things cracking and crumbling is courage, Andrea.
Thank you, Tina.
So Lydianne, you moved on to another project, I believe related to your background in human resources. Is that the work you want to do here in Canada?
Yes, that's my goal, to back to my career in human resources. So I participated in a practical experience at PRS in a human resource. It was 8 weeks, but it helped me a lot to be more familiar with terminology and mm-hmm. gain confidence to be able to work in this field in Canada. It was an opportunity that is helping me to think as mentee from the perspective of mentoring program mm-hmm. of an immigrant woman and as an HR professional. So when I started at Ethnography, I thought I couldn't go back to HR. And now I find myself totally engaged to make a difference in other people's lives, just like they did in mine. That is gratitude, right?
Wow. And with all your rich and gratifying learning journey experiences, regaining your confidence, building all your skills, your positive energy and ability to reassess is such an inspiration, Lydianne. What is your vision of supporting women in the work you do?
First of all, we must have empathy. So a humanized look with another. Build a relationship.
Thank you for saying that.
Thank you. So build a relationship, strengthen us. Teamwork, team management, communication are skills that have no difference in language. They are universal, right? Yeah, it was not easy, but the best thing to do is put yourself in the other's shoe.
Oh, yes.
Only then can you have a broader view. During the process, it was so uncertain, and today so clear for me. I was on a learning journey. And learning is an eternal process. It never stops. And today I see that the journey I took was my favorite gift. I learned a lot. I want to be able to help other humans as well. Mm-hmm. I know that many who are listening to this podcast must be feeling alone, afraid, mm-hmm. lack of confidence, and lack of network was I was in the beginning. And I can say, you are not alone. You are here for you. Maybe you can make your learning journey lighter behind everything we learning on this journey. Sometimes you have to face your weakness so that your strengths appear.
Lydia, it's a treat for our audience to hear you. And these are such inspiring lived experiences. You have to endure the storm to appreciate the rainbow.
Oh, thank you, Tina.
Andrea, what does this process and this journey feel like today?
For me, I just learned so much and it's been so meaningful. And I have to say, when we started, we never thought we'd be quite here. And to go back to that garment metaphor that we started with, learning journeys is a coming together, a weaving of individual strands to create a pattern and texture that borrow from the unique elements of each strand while ensuring the integrity of the entire garment. Sometimes it's not the tangibles and the outcomes. And in this case, because of COVID and because of the flexibility of the funding, really, we were able to focus on what was most generative and alive. To build something that reflects the diversity of our society. And really what can be when we step into possibilities around decentralizing leadership, recognizing there's no one right way of working, tending to relationships, and by encouraging and taking care of each other along the way.
And pivoting if we have to, and as you did, improvising and reimagining.
Absolutely.
And what is really, really powerful is, Andrea, that you focused on the journey, the impact that the journey had, and not just on the outcome.
It was really all about the journey together.
Wow. Thank you so much, Andrea. Thank you so much, Lydian, for sharing your journey as leads, as active IWAC members with us today.
You're very welcome, Tina. It's been wonderful to be here with both you and Lydian.
Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you so much for Learning Journeys and PRS for this opportunity.
Join us for our next podcast, where co-designers Sidra Mobeen and Tia Alba talk to me about their project in leading informal support groups and advocacy for immigrant women and childcare. Till then, thank you for listening to us and stay safe.